Welcome to the New Wolsey Theatre Podcast. I am Zach.
And I am Zanna.
And I'm Jack. The New Wolsey Theatre is an award-winning theatre in Ipswich.
We're a vibrant cultural hub offering all kinds of performances, community engagement, and artist development.
We're going to be chatting all about different areas of the theatre and the arts.
And thank you for joining us on this episode. Welcome back for another episode here on the New Wolsey Theatre Podcast. And we are really delighted as we have a very special guest with us today, James Yarker, who is Artistic Director of Stans Caff.
Hello.
Hello, James. Well, in the room is me and Zach.
Hello.
And we've been talking about this interview for quite some time because we're very excited to hear more about Stans Caff, not just about community service, which is the show that's coming here, but a bit more about your theatre and how it all came about. Should we start there? That would be really interesting to know.
How it came about?
Yeah, love to know.
Oh, yeah. Well, as a youth, I thought theatre was really boring and that it was fun to do, but who would want to sit and watch it? And I was trying to work out what the best job in the world could possibly be. And I thought a film director, that would be the thing to do. But I had done an A-level in maths, physics and geography, and I had no idea how you went from that to being a film director. I thought maybe going via theatre studies could work. And at the time, Lancaster University had a way where you could come in to study one thing, but then you could shuffle yourself around a little bit. And I saw that little loophole and I thought, oh, that'll get me into theatre studies. That all worked out very well. And then two things happened. One, I got introduced to some amazing theatre that was not in any way boring. That was very, very exciting and really fired me up. And then I also started to spot that films were coming out that were the director's cut. Mm. I thought, hold on. These are some of the world's, you know, premiere directors, and they're having to release the director's cut. And when you make a theatre show, the thing that hits the stage is the thing you want to happen. And I just thought, wow, this has overtaken film now in my interests. So there we go.
No, that's really interesting. So that moment, that step from having got a qualification and wanting to live in that world and meeting some amazing people, what happened then? How did Stans Caff happen?
Well, I graduated just as my friend Graham's first theatre company, Glory What Glory, that he'd established on graduating from Lancaster, that sort of fell apart just as I was graduating. And we knew each other and each other's work at that point. So I rather tentatively asked if he fancied starting another theatre company with me. And I was shocked when he said yes. And we set about trying to decide, A, where we should base the company, and B, what we should call it. Mm. Where to base it was fairly easy because he was from Birmingham. And Birmingham at the time seemed like the biggest city we could see that had the least number of people doing the thing we wanted to do. So market economics, that seemed like a good place to go. And it was also a very cheap place to live at the time, which when you're going to start a theatre company, it probably would earn you very much money is a good thing. And if you're a touring company, being in the middle of the country seemed like a good place to be. And then what to call this nascent company, we really didn't have any good ideas, but we had agreed that we would start the company while we were eating a big old fried up all day breakfast in Stans Caff.
Stans Caff is a devising theatre. You always set out to create this.
Absolutely, yeah, make your own stuff.
Mm. I know we've talked about this before, but I would love you to explain what a devising theatre actually does.
The way I characterise it, anything that doesn't start with a script, what a playwright wrote. So it could start with some words, but then you're going to make it collaboratively, very principally in the rehearsal room with the people who are there with you at the time. So you have a great deal of freedom and it allows you to make work that you wouldn't write. So if you're writing something, even if you're trying to write something without words, so I suppose a massive list of stage directions, your thinking, I suppose, is curtailed a bit. Yes, that the process, I suppose, makes you operate in a certain area, whereas the devising processes allow you to generate material in a whole range of different ways. I think a common misconception is to think of devising as a process. And while some companies might have a process that they follow each time they make a show and sort of put new content into their devising process and the show sort of falls out the other end of the devising machine. In truth, each devising process is original, nuanced according to the theme that you're trying to make. So Community Service, for example, is a show that's got gospel music as at its heart and is a biography and is about Black British culture in the 70s and 80s. And so you've got to make that very different way to the way you might make any other show, I suppose.
Mm. Now, well, you've written a book about devising theatre, so I thought I would put a link to it in our show notes so everybody can rush to your website and buy one. I don't know how many people do devising theatre, and that successfully, like you, James. I mean, you've been doing it for, what, 30-something years?
32 years.
33.
There we go. Thanks for doing the maths. Yeah. Making me feel old.
Really?
Lots of small companies do devising, but I think Complicité, they devise, don't they? And I imagine Wise Children is a devising company. And
so there are
out there. And our book can't claim an enormous amount of credit. Dr. Mark Crossley did most of the writing. I swanned around, wrote some sections. But yeah, it's nice. So it's sort of an introduction to how we approach devising. It covers a whole range of our work, because some of it happens in theatres, but other stuff happens elsewhere. And it takes you through from having an idea to initial stages, how you deal with text, how you edit, and how audiences are sort of crucial to the process. And so, yeah, lots of examples. Weirdly, not that many pictures. You have a limit when Matthew in Bloomsbury, Matthew, I think, they're saying, oh, yeah, you can have whatever it was, 12 pictures. Well, why are we limited on the pictures? It doesn't cost you any more to put more pictures in. It's a bit of a shame, because you have to go to the website to see all the lovely, lush colour photos. If you buy it from our website, all the profits go into us making new shows.
Very good. Well, check that out, folks, on the show notes of this podcast episode.
James, could you tell us more about Community Service, about how you started it? What was your inspiration, your ideas, and your connections to the show?
Yeah, and it goes back, because people may be aware that before it went bankrupt, Birmingham hosted the Commonwealth Games. Mm-hmm. And we knew that there was some arts commissioning money coming to the city for that event. So we started looking around at what we might suggest making. And we bought a book, which is Stories from the Commonwealth Games. And each chapter told a different story. And the second chapter was about Precious McKenzie, who was a South African weightlifter who I remember as a kid, because he was tiny. He was 4'11" when he was a fully grown man. And I saw him, I must have been, I don't know, 9, and I was 4'11" or whatever. And so he was, the difference between us was he was lifting enormous weights. So he's this very iconic figure. But what I hadn't realised as a kid was he was born in apartheid era South Africa. And so he's got this incredible backstory and ended up coming to this country and representing England and winning 4 consecutive gold medals in weightlifting. So that's a really obvious story to do for the Commonwealth Games. But then I didn't want the story to just be about this sort of historic male figure. So, let's get a contemporary female weightlifter in to sort of balance the story up. And we got introduced to Emily Campbell, who is 5'11". So President McKenzie lifted in the smallest male class and Emily lifts in the largest female class. You got this really lovely combination. And so we made a show called Precious Emily. Actually, we made 12 shows called Precious Emily, because we worked with 10 different primary schools and each of them made their own different version of a show. Then we took scenes from those 10 shows and made an 11th show with, 60 students, 6 from each of the 10 schools. And amazingly, Precious McKenzie was over from where he lives in New Zealand. He's 87 now. He came to see the show because he was coming. Emily Campbell came because obviously he's an absolute iconic hero. So, and then we did a 12th version of it, which was a family show, which was a bilingual BSL show, which took ideas from the student shows. Okay, I'm going to start talking about Community Service now. Because what happened in the gala version of the Precious Emily show, where we had 6 students from each of the 10 schools, there was someone in the audience because their daughter was in the show. And this guy came to us a week or so later, phoned us up and said, I can come and talk to you. And he is this guy called Ray Prince. His daughter was in the Precious Emily show. And he said he'd been deeply inspired by the show because it featured a black British hero that he'd never heard of before. And he said that he had his own hero who he thought would be an apt subject for a show, his elder brother Trevor. And so asking him, you know, okay, so what did your brother do that means he's worthy of a show? It turned out that this Trevor was 16 years older than Ray and was one of the West Midlands Police's first black officers. And not only that, but he was a leading figure in the gospel music scene of the time and was incredibly well known for that and a very loved sort of thing. He was a beat Bobby. So he just spent his entire career just walking the streets of Birmingham, essentially. So he's quite a figure in these two communities. And obviously being a black officer at the time was incredibly challenging. It was the time of the Handsworth riots, it's a miner strike. There was racism within the force. And then those, the Rasta Revolution was coming along, which meant that the police were, you know, the race relations between the police and the black community were troubled. Turns out that there was a huge schism within the Pentecostal church in Birmingham at the time, and the band that Trevor was putting together was quite revolutionary because it was part of moving the gospel music scene from quite a straight sound to being much more influenced by popular music, Michael Jackson, Earth, Wind and Fire. And so that was controversial, and his band was bringing members from across the divide between the churches to just make the best music that they could. Incredibly rich soup of ideas. So we thought, well, Ray's right. This is good good material for a show.
Trevor's not alive anymore.
No. And it's sort of interesting because in a way, Precious McKenzie, you've got this very obvious heroic story where he's born into incredible poverty. He grew up in foster care. He was abused. His dad was killed by a crocodile because he was a professional crocodile hunter. And he had to, he was a shoemaker by trade. He became South African champion. He got a transfer to a British company. He became British champion and ended up winning a gold medal. And that's, so that journey is like, it's the stuff of Hollywood.
Yeah. And that is your sort of epic hero from zero to hero, literally. Yeah.
Whereas Trevor Prince, we kind of, you know, you're asking his kids, you know, oh, did he come home really stressed? No, he's very good humoured, you know. So, oh, well, did, you know, you see it in your sort of, your classic narrative arc, you want this point where he's at breaking point. And you couldn't, like, in a way, although, you know, his life is certainly heroic for his contribution in so many ways to a range of different communities, but it hasn't got that classic arc that a Hollywood producer would be looking for. So it's been really interesting to make a show which is very engaging, funny, sad, but it's sort of a little bit more incident based. We've made a load of stuff up as well because, you know, Trevor had four children, but, you know, we've got a cast of, and they're five actors, so you don't want too many of them to have to play kids, etc. And also, if you want to talk about things like the Rasta Revolution, like all his children are still very much church people, so that kind of doesn't work. So we've been inspired by his life. We've been inspired by the challenges he faced, the people he met, things that happened to him. But then we've taken vast artistic license on all the characters.
Yeah.
But, so no one needs to worry that they are misrepresented in the show.
For sure.
They're not in the show.
Yeah. But I think it's funny, and I know you are actually doing a special post-show talk, a Q&A after the first performance here at the New Woolsey, to really delve a bit deeper into Trevor as a hero and how he is and isn't and what makes a hero, basically, in our opinion. You know, and he was, though. And it sounds to me like, you know, if his children were saying, you know, he came home, he's fine. I bet he wasn't. He just didn't let them know. And that's the heroic bit for me.
Well, yes, that's absolutely, that's really nicely observed. And he apparently used to disappear into the front room and just play his guitar for sort of hours. And you can see that must have been the release, and his faith as well, you know, a faithful man putting his trust in God, I suppose.
We've got to talk about the show now because we need a bit more about it, don't we? Because we've got quite a few people coming to see it. And I think it would be very helpful, James, if you could give us a bit of a synopsis of, I mean, we obviously know Trevor's in it. Is he called Trevor in it?
Trevor's called Trevor. We've made up a version of Trevor Prince. Mm-hmm. And it's a show with an interval, which might not sound particularly dramatic, but it's only the second show we've ever made with an interval. So I'm excited by that. It's set in two time frames. So in the first half, it's about, I suppose, Trevor and his relationship with, well, his introduction to the police, his starting the band developing, and his relationship developing with Steve, his sort of beat partner. And then the second half pivots to be more about his daughter and her burgeoning relationship with Ken. And Ken is a Rastafarian, and Janet, the daughter, is interested in Ken and Rastafarianism, and obviously loyal to her parents as well. Mm-hmm. And this, she has this tension of her father being a police officer and how that goes down in her world.
Yeah.
And the Handsworth riots crop up as well in the second half.
I thought they may. How many are in the company?
So we've got 8 on stage. Mm-hmm. We've got a live gospel band, so we've got drum, bass, keyboards, and then Reese, who co-directed with me and Steady, he plays guitar and Trevor. Mm-hmm. And then we've got actors. We've got 4 of them. Absolutely tremendous, tremendous company. Really lovely, really great personalities which shine off the stage. We've performed the show, 4 or 5 times now, and you can see they're getting really comfortable with it. Uh-huh. Very happy and excited. They know where the gags come. They know what the audience like. And they're starting to really get stuck into it.
Yeah. And it must be nice for you as a director watching that land when it all comes together.
You good people of Ipswich are going to get a version of the show which is significantly better than the good people of Coventry, who have all been really enjoying it. It's been going down very, very well. People laughing and crying and cheering, etc. But we're learning about the show. We're finding better ways of doing stuff. We're unleashing the band a bit more. So after every performance, I've just got a massive list of notes and I try and just tweak this and tweak that. It's really lovely. It's getting richer each time in the cast. Really nailing it now.
I was so excited to do that. And I think, because it's your own play, you can change a line if you need to.
Oh, yeah, that's it. You don't have to phone up, check off and say, Can we rephrase this, please? Yeah, no, it's nice. And it's lovely. We've had some of Trevor's old colleagues come to see the show, and they've seen some of their stories in the show. And I think it's been incredibly emotional for them, seeing themselves acknowledged, I suppose.
Yeah. So before you go, because we can't talk to you forever, which we're really enjoying, which is such a shame, but tell us a couple of things about Trevor that might not be in the show, but are so... just a bit of fun, really.
Oh, he met Muhammad Ali, and Precious McKenzie lifted Muhammad Ali up on his shoulders, and there's a photo of that. So we've got a Muhammad Ali reference in 2 consecutive shows. Trevor was a great sportsman as well, and his 4 children are really lovely people, and they've made a song, a really beautiful tribute song to their father, because they're all musicians, so it's an incredibly musical family. Mm. And if you search Trevor Prince funeral on YouTube, there's a full 3-hour documentation. His amazing funeral service with police and church people in attendance and eulogies.
Yeah.
Whole thing. Well, amazing.
Definitely going to do that. Definitely. Listen, thank you so much for your time.
It's just been really good fun, and I can't wait to come and see you all in Ipswich with community service.
We'll see you then.
My dogs. My dog's wanting me now.
Yeah, I can hear that barking in the background. Well, you've been long enough. Okay, well, thanks a lot from all of us, and we'll see you next week. Take care.
Brilliant. Thanks so much. Bye now.
Thanks, James. Bye-bye.
Community Service is currently on its UK tour at the following venues. The Tobacco Factory in Bristol from the 23rd and 27th of April. The New Wolseley Theatre in Ipswich from the 30th of April to the 1st of May. The Derby Theatre from the 2nd to the 4th of May. and the Birmingham Hippodrome from the 8th to the 11th of May.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Please tell your friends about us and give us a share on social media.
If you'd like to get involved with our podcast, please drop us a message on social media.
We have a full and exciting program of shows, activities and events throughout the year. For more information, visit our website at wolseytheatre.co.uk or call the box office on 01473 295 900.
The New Wolsey Theatre is a registered charity and relies on funding partners, investors and donations. We gratefully acknowledge the support of Arts Council England, Suffolk County Council and Ipswich Borough Council.
This podcast is for entertainment purposes. It's produced and managed by our friends at podtalk.co.uk and is the copyright of the New Wolsey Theatre.